discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
Jim Monroe has given his life to one goal, creating wonder. He's astonished crowds from on top of a pitcher's mound and from behind a piano bench. But his greatest joy has been the amazement he's created as a magician. For years, he performed seeming miracles for crowds of thousands across the world. But when he was forced back into the audience, he was diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. Today, the true story of a magician who experienced real magic and his encounter with the God behind it. Jim Monroe, a celebrated illusionist and author of The Charlatan, the skeptical, mysterious, supernatural true story of a Christian magician, joins us today on the road. A marvelous day to you, sir. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here, man. Thanks. Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Well, hey, that's. Let's hope you say that at the end of the interview as well as at the beginning. So let's meet you first in the present day, brother, before we trace your story back. You are in that most mysterious of professions, a magician, and as we said, a celebrated one at that. What is daily life like for a practitioner like yourself?
Well, we wake up in the morning and we put our pants on like everybody else. We eat breakfast. We don't put our pants on like everybody else. We levitate into them. No, it's just, you know, I'm a pretty normal guy. I spend my days, dreaming up things that, you know, people would think are fascinating. And, I practice a lot of different techniques and moves and things like that. I like close up magic a lot. So there's a lot to practice, but yeah, I spend my days thinking about things that most people wouldn't. I'll just say that.
and you have to be a terribly creative human being. Is that fair to say? I mean, somebody has to be gifted with creativity to do something like what you do.
I think so. Yeah. I think it takes a special somebody to figure out how I'm going to get a spectator's cell phone that's recording a video inside of a jelly bean jar without people knowing it. It just takes a certain kind of special somebody to do that. Yeah, that's what I spent two and a half years trying to figure that out, and finally it came to me. So,
oh my word, that sounds like something off of the big screen, like something we'd see in a film like The Illusionist or The Prestige. Is it really like that? I mean, is it that epic, or when you figure it out, is it somehow more practical and more sensible?
It's always very silly. Yeah, it really is. Penn Jillette said the magicians spend the most time, you know, with things that people would never normally actually think about. Like for instance, in one of his tricks, he has to put a chain around a cardboard cutout of Chris Angel and load something into a prop. So we give the most time and effort on the most meaningless things, and it can be very monotonous and silly. But to produce these seeming miracles, it takes us poking holes in people's perceptions, and oftentimes that can be really boring, believe it or not.
So. It's deep stuff. Well, now that we've gotten to know you a little bit, if you'll forgive me for pressing the proverbial rewind button,
no worries.
Okay, man, thanks. How does a magician get his start? I mean, on your path to magic, was there a moment that captured your imagination early on and made you want to pursue it?
I was just that kid who got a magic set when I was little. I got a Fisher-Price magic set from my grandmother on my fifth birthday. And I never put it down. Huh. And one of, you know, those little small tiny things turned into larger ideas. And so every Christmas and every birthday, I'd ask for magic books, or every time we go to the library, I'd be reading stuff. I just kind of became an obsession. And as I got older, I guess I realized that I was pretty good. people would freak out, and I knew how to do things better than most. And so I just kept pursuing it. It kind of just, I think it chose me, you know. I don't think I chose it, kind of thing.
Well, one of the fascinating things about our guest today, Jim Monroe, who's a celebrated illusionist, travels the world with a show called The Maze, and the author of The Charlatan, The Skeptical, Mysterious, Supernatural True Story of a Christian Magician. But you were not only a prodigy at magic, you also had a gift that just about 90% of American males would love to have, which is you were a tremendous baseball player and ranked top 50 in the country as a collegiate athlete, a prospect who was drafted by a Major League Baseball team. How did you decide to go with magic instead of going to baseball?
So it's a good question. So I ended up going to the University of Texas after turning down an offer from the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. They're called the Tampa Bay. They're the Tampa Bay Rays now.
Right.
And I decided to go to college because my mom was going to kill me if I didn't go to college first. And so while at the University of Texas, I suffered what most athletes, you know, will cringe about, but I suffered kind of a career ending shoulder injury. And so that kind of gave me a lot more time to be thinking about illusion and magic.
Well, I mean, when you turned your investment completely, the investment of your talents, the investment of your creativity over to magic, I mean, is it a tough gig to break into? Is it highly competitive? I imagine it is.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Well, thankfully for where we started, though, there was, you know, it wasn't just the illusion or the magic. It was, I was involved with a group of people who were passionate about starting conversations with people about philosophy and what they believe to be true. So those two paired together, I think, created more of a platform for us to start. So platform for me to start.
Let's talk a little bit about faith, because when you grew up, what was your relationship with faith? Did you have a faith that was passed down to you? What was your attitude towards it?
Yeah, I grew up, my family considered themselves to be Christians. My parents were, we kind of went to Lutheran church growing up. I was confirmed as a Lutheran, I think, at 12 or 13 years old. I went to Catholic school. So I think unfortunately, my parents didn't have much church history growing up. a little bit of rift there. So I go to Catholic school, Lutheran church, and then, you know, I guess like most adolescent males, it seemed like all the girls, the pretty girls, went to like the non-denominational churches. So I ended up going to one of those. I was like 14. I was around it, and I was around people who we talked. I heard them talk about Jesus and religion and spirituality, but I never really felt like it dropped into my heart. It was always just a topic of conversation, and it was almost felt like, you know, it was like an ethnicity, so to speak. So I had friends who were Jewish. I had friends who were Catholic. I had friends who were Protestants, and I was Lutheran, and that was pretty much it. So it wasn't until I got to college where I really kind of realized that whatever I was believing to be true didn't really hold any water. And so by the time I got to university, I went to the University of Texas. By the time I got to Austin, Texas, to school, I kind of was honest with myself and just decided I really didn't believe in what these people were talking about. In fact, I didn't think they believed in it either. I thought they were aspiring to a set of traditions and values that seemed good on paper. And of course, you know, everyone should follow the Ten Commandments, but that kind of stuff. But it was never a personal conviction or a faith.
One of the interesting parts of that discussion in reading your story is you talked about this skeptical nature that made you so good at the creativity portion of being a magician, and how that same skeptical nature made you look at the concept of God. And you used the analogy of that famous line from The Wizard of Oz about the man behind the curtain. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Talk a little bit about the relationship between that skeptical nature and your view of God in those early years.
Yeah, so I I am a skeptic by nature. In fact, to this day, I still consider myself to be very skeptical. I've been convinced, overwhelmingly so, on some of these tenets of what I know my faith to be and who Jesus is. But when you are a magician, you learn to take things that people think are real, or excuse me, take things that are fake and make people think that they're real.
Right.
So there's always this perception of motivation on what the creator is doing, you know? And so for me, I thought, well, I kind of came to this place of unbelief or agnosticism or whatever. It kind of centered around the fact that I kind of felt like everyone who believed this stuff was convincing themselves of something that was true when it really wasn't, in an sure. effort to just kind of make meaning of the world in which they lived. And that's what people do. Everyone does that. They have to make meaning of the circumstances in their life, otherwise they go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought Christians chose this Jesus guy because it seemed like a nicer alternative. Not that it was true. It just was an easy alternative. And so that's how I thought of Christianity. That's how I thought of most anybody who believes in kind of a religious understanding of the world. And so there was always, though, like one thing that I think, if I was completely honest in my idea of whatever I was back then, being around Christianity, being around Lutheran Catholic churches, it was, God, you know, if you do exist, if there is, if you are even there, whatever you are, and you show up and you reveal yourself in a way that just overwhelmingly convinces me of your truth, then I'll turn. I'll stop doing what I'm doing. And I'll follow you or it or whatever you are. So that was the caveat in my discussion with whatever God was.
Jim Monroe is with us on the road, a celebrated illusionist. He travels the world with a show called The Maze. He's author of The Charlatan, the skeptical, mysterious, supernatural true story of a Christian magician. And I did get a kick out of that phrase in your book, because even though perhaps many of us haven't said it this way, basically you're saying you needed God to show you something. I mean, maybe some of us are afraid to maybe put that in words, but that's basically what you were saying.
Yeah. Like, how can we expect to believe if he doesn't do something in our lives first, right? To me, it's like if we just drum up faith, we're not really believing him, because faith comes by hearing and hearing by his word. So he's the one that does it.
Hmm.
He's the one that starts the process, I think. So
in college, you talked about heading to Texas for school, and you were invited to church at one point. And you say that you went to church and something did happen. There was something there that you couldn't explain, but it didn't quite rise to the level of this sort of epic moment that God intervened.
Right. I went to church because I was dating a girl who told me I needed to go. So for all you, you start getting missional daters out there. I decided to go to church because the girl I liked told me that I needed to go. So I went, but yeah, I ended up going, and I don't know if I was ready or if I was, I don't know what it was, but I experienced something that I couldn't fit into my current worldview. And so I needed to go kind of reprocess and investigate what that was. It was just a beautiful experiential trust and a moment of what I would have considered like true faith.
Mm.
And I equate it to like maybe what Peter was feeling when Matthew 16, I think, is when Jesus asks him, like, who do you say that I am? And he says, you're the Christ. And then Jesus says, you know, well, it's upon this revelation I'm going to build my church. And so he's like, flesh and blood could not have revealed this to you, but only my Father in heaven. So I felt whatever I knew Christians considered to be revelation. But I wasn't at that moment going to just like completely cave my heart, you know, my present agnostic ideas of everything. I mean, I was obviously experienced something, but I needed to kind of fall into the matrix of what I already deemed what I thought was true and right. So it had to fit the profile. And so I had kind of like this chess match with God for many, many years. And I probably would have told you that I was a Christian, but I would kind of go in and out of doubt and faith and doubt and faith. And I'd waver quite a bit. And it wasn't until I got sick that I really begin to feel what I believe Christians were talking about this whole time, which was this true conviction. So,
well, and this is just an extraordinary part of your story. One of the central pivot points of your life. It's still in your 20s. Comes this stunning health crisis that basically descends out of the blue for you, right?
Right. Yeah, I was diagnosed with a really rare form of leukemia when I was 29, and it was a type of leukemia that most people don't get. 13% of all leukemia patients acquire this thing called Philadelphia positive ALL is the term for it. So it was, required a bone marrow transplant, to be, completely cured. And, you know, I was obviously extremely weak and the cancer progressed past. I mean, I fought going to the hospital for a long time and little did I know this thing just kept growing. So by the time I checked in, we were kind of in dire straits and they told me that they were going to start chemotherapy immediately. And then, the only option for me to be completely cured was a bone marrow transplant, which is a fairly risky process. And it required the perfect blood of a perfect match, literally. So out of a 9 million person international database, there was only one person on the planet that they were able to identify who could save me of my disease. It was a 19-year-old female from Wisconsin. So it was through this process that I believe the God of the universe was beginning to reveal who he was to me, and in a very detailed way, in a way that I'd always wanted him to. And he used cancer to do it.
The extraordinary story of Jim Monroe today on the road. Jim, a celebrated illusionist, travels the world with a show called The Maze. He's written the book The Charlatan, the skeptical, mysterious, supernatural true story of a Christian magician. And perhaps understandably, when you paint the picture of what happened, you say that after this took place and it was a successful operation and you are in remission, right? First of all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm cured. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. And you just could not ignore God after that, right?
That's right. Yeah, the story that was laid out for me was literally so, I mean, people talk about a leap of faith. This wasn't a leap. This is like a baby step. And then the odds of something like this happen, I mean, the way it happened, were so astronomically, coincidental that it would be silly for me not to acknowledge that maybe there was something bigger going on behind the scenes that was orchestrating all of these seemingly random circumstances to get me to a place of repentance and faith. And so that's my story and I'm sticking to it. They need to read the book so they can get all the details. It's pretty juicy steak, but, yeah,
it is. Yeah. It is a juicy steak. And, I want to ask you even about the title because I'm someone who kind of geeks out on words. So I want to ask you about the meaning behind the charlatan. But I mean, really, after this took place, after you went through this, I mean, this changed your entire life, including vocationally. I mean, you really have transformed your act until today where you travel with The Maze, this show that basically builds on your personal experience. Talk a little bit about that transformation and what The Maze is all about.
Yeah, so we, there was a friend of mine and I who did a magic show together, and we called ourselves The Maze before, but I was more of his producer or his setup man. He was a little bit more of the show, and I was just more of the help, although we did magic together. And after my cancer battle, the Lord had kind of served up what I believe was the message, the mission from that moment onward. And he gave me the story and the message to share And so, yeah, The Maze is the name of our show. I like the word The Maze just because I think it perfectly exemplifies kind of the world that we all walk into as people, all kinds of different opportunities, different pathways, different choices. All of them look exactly the same, but yet only one of them is true. Mm. And mazes can be very confusing, you know, they can be frustrating. But the only answer in a maze is the one unadulterated path. That's the way out. It's the right way. So we use that as a basic analogy. And also, you know, a maze means confusion. When you say you amaze somebody, you're injecting confusion into them, actually. Mm. So that's what a magic trick does as well. So it was kind of a natural fit. But yeah, we go also too. I don't know if you knew this, but we've become the single largest recruiter of bone marrow donors in the country. The most effective tool that they have right now. So not only do people come to our show and hear my story, but they also sign up to save someone else's life.
Wow.
And out of the 11,000+ people we've signed up over the last 3 years, we've already had 49, I think, now, who have been contacted to go to save someone's biological existence.
Which is also
really neat. So nearly 50 people so far have been biologically saved because of this little magic show.
Man.
So if that's not Jesus, I don't know what is. You know?
Well said. Well said, Jim Monroe here with us on the road. This is just remarkable because you look back along this story, and even as a young person, you're looking for these epic moments that will lead you and guide you to purpose and understanding and knowing who God is, if he exists. And then all of these epic moments come into your path and just so clearly represent exactly what you were looking for, and God really just interacting with your story and bringing you where he wanted you to be. When you talk to a lot of folks who perhaps find themselves in a place where you were, maybe they're, you know, smart people who are very skeptical about supernatural things. I mean, this story, this life that you are living has given you an awfully special place to share from, I imagine.
Yes, it has. I'm very thankful for this story. It was literally hell getting here, but I'm extremely thankful for it. You know, nobody that I've ever talked to about this can argue with me. They can disagree, but they can't argue with it. I'm kind of like the guy now who walks into a room and encounters a bunch of people who may not believe what I do, and I'm able to share my story. And even though they're kind of like, well, you know what? If I was ever going to have to say that I genuinely understand why somebody believes that, I you're the guy for sure. So, but yeah, and then also too, people have a hard time disagreeing with the fact that with what we're doing with this story and helping save other people's lives.
Yeah.
So, I think people who hear this story potentially can recalibrate what they think the supernatural is and how it works and how it moves in through our lives. I think oftentimes people expect that God is like this genie in a lamp. And he's not, he doesn't operate that way. So for anybody out there who's listening to this, who's like got questions about, you know, or skeptical, they should definitely read the book. I think it's been a huge help to a lot of people.
He is the author of The Charlatan, the skeptical, mysterious, supernatural true story of a Christian magician. And it is, in fact, as he described it earlier, a hearty steak indeed. And Jim, if someone wants to do exactly as you describe and head out and grab a copy of The Charlatan, is there a website that's the best place to start that journey?
Yeah, it's whatisthemaze.com. It'll be where they can go.
Perfect.
Whatisthemaze.com.
Man, it was an amazing experience just to be able to get to chat with you today and hear your story. We so appreciate your time. And as well, I mean, this remarkable ministry that you have in connecting donors in search of the bone marrow transplant procedure, is that maze site, is that the best place to go for information on that as well?
Well, they can come to our shows through that site. Our tour schedule's on there. We're going to be, aren't you? You're in South Dakota, right?
Yes, we're all across the upper Midwest, good sir.
Okay, well, that's where we're going to be in the spring of 2018. So get on there and look at the calendar. And then we'll also, they can go to our website, whatisthemaze.com, to see tour dates, but they can also go to bethematch.org and sign up there as well.
Perfect. It really has been remarkable to chat with you today, sir. You're a good man, and it's great to get to know you a little bit. Thanks so much for your time.
Yes, thank you, man. It was fun to be on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.